Councillor Jeff Wheeldon from the municipality of Brighton, and it's regarding social service system review. Okay. Okay, we have to do a procedural motion first before we can start. So I'll read the resolution and then, and hopefully members of the committee will approve. Whereas the Social Service Committee Terms of Reference states that a delegation requested from the public that does not relate to an agenda item shall be heard if a majority of the committee members vote to permit the delegation. Now therefore be resolved that the Social Service Committee allowed Jeff Wheeldon to delegate to the committee regarding social service system review. Moved by Ostrander and seconded by Deputy Warden Ankiski. All in favor? The motion is carried. Jeff, please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you all for allowing me to delegate today. I apologize for being tardy on my request. I speak today as a resident of Northumberland who in various capacities has insight into the social services system and staff. On November 19th, County Council Lucas Cleveland brought a motion seeking a comprehensive reconsideration of the entire social services department. The motion was deferred to the next county council meeting rather than being referred to this committee. I would like to speak to it at county council as well, although I recognize that that also requires a suspension of normal procedures there. Nonetheless, I do want to speak to it here and offer what I hope this committee and county council as a whole, including Councillor Cleveland, will agree is a better path forward. First, I think we can all agree that the current state of things is far from ideal. Councillor Cleveland's motion correctly identifies that municipal budgets, local businesses, frontline workers, and community neighborliness are all strained. But let's be clear that any inefficiency or ineffectiveness in our system begins with scarcity. In January of this year, AMO asked the province for $13 billion over the coming decade to eradicate homelessness, and the province responded with $378 million for heart hubs, something Northumberland applied for and did not receive. It's my understanding that that program mostly redirected funding from the safe consumption sites that the province closed at the same time. Federally, the Parliamentary Budget Office reported last year that in order to cut homelessness in half, the government would need to increase funding by $3.5 billion per year, and the feds allocated $500 million instead. We're driving the road to end homelessness with only an eighth of a tank. We should not be surprised we're not getting there. But despite chronic underfunding by other levels of government, we've managed to make great strides with what funds they have provided. The opening of a modern shelter at 310 Division Street provided massive improvements in service delivery, eliminating many of the reasons that people had previously had for refusing the supports provided by our social services team. We were able to keep more people safe and move more people to better options for shelter and support. Ultimately, these efforts eliminated the major encampment at the Brookside property, but that success did not happen overnight. And there are still many who are not adequately served with the resources we have available to us, so visible homelessness and petty crime continue to frustrate residents. As I have come to know our social services team, I have become increasingly impressed with what they have accomplished despite the barriers they face. Every aspect of everything they do is highly regulated, often in ways that are well-intentioned and serve a purpose, but also undermine their efforts nonetheless. And every initiative is limited by the resources available, resources that are here today, but maybe not tomorrow, in an ever-shifting political landscape, a landscape that's increasingly hostile to the work that our staff do, and even to our staff themselves, as some residents look for people to blame for the state of things. If council is going to discuss a review of their operations, I would suggest that we look no further to staff themselves, who know exactly how they would like things to be different. We'd be happy to map the many barriers to their success. And I want to humbly suggest that council can and must do more to support the success of their staff and shelter them from politicization, lest we lose these brilliant and compassionate people to the private sector, or worse, to burnout and despair. And I want to stress that I'm not overstating that. These people would earn more respect and money doing almost anything else, almost anywhere else, but they continue to serve here, and we cannot take that for granted. Rather than looking to outside experts to reform our department, then we need only to listen to the experts in this room, and as we ask them, how different would things be if you had all the support you needed to do your work, to do your best work? Second, I want to briefly address the language of treatment-based recovery-oriented models, because I believe there is an ethical question hidden in the growing movement toward institutionalizing unhoused residents that is not being adequately addressed. The question of whether we as a society respect an individual's choices, even when those choices could result in poor outcomes for themselves. I understand why people are drifting away from upholding personal autonomy and agency as central values. Seeing unwell people continue to reject help is slowly changing people's minds about whether personal agency is more valuable than life and wellness. And we're seeing this across many jurisdictions in North America. But as our Inhart constable told me, everyone has the right to be unwell. If we're going to decide that people don't have that right, let's have that conversation. I'm not sure we would like following that logic very far. Of course, we want people to choose to access the supports that we offer them, but so long as the supports are so constrained that they cannot meet the needs of those people, and so long as those services are delivered in a context in which the care of those people is hotly politicized and even in some cases violently opposed, we should not expect people to willingly submit themselves to our care. They have good reasons, or at least reasons that are good to them, to go it alone. Models that would force treatment onto them without first ensuring that such treatment would be good for them cannot succeed. We arrived at the system we have, including its respect for the autonomy of the individual, because we live in a liberal democracy that enshrines the right of every one of us to bodily autonomy. Those values may be shifting in this political moment, but they are nonetheless enshrined in our Constitution, the basis of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and therefore we have an obligation to uphold them in the way we serve our most vulnerable residents. Which brings me to my suggestion for a better way forward. The province of Ontario requires we all have a community safety and well-being plan, which accurately describes community safety and well-being as emergent properties of a healthy community. In short, when our residents look out for one another, when we have a thriving business community downtown, when we have functional support systems, both official and unofficial, crime decreases and public trust increases, and we all have a higher quality of life. Northumberland's community safety and well-being plan is past due for a renewal, and steps are already being taken toward a revived and revised plan. I understand they met on Monday. I say revived because the existing plan effectively died. Its implementation was to be guided by a committee that, aside from this past Monday, hasn't met since 2023. And the concept was not set up for success in the first place. And I say this without disrespect for the people who wrote it. I was one of them. But we missed something. It had a fundamental flaw. While the features of a healthy community that the plan described take place at a grassroots neighborhood level, the plan and its implementation were piloted from a top-down county-level perspective that could not adequately engage with the hyper-local, decentralized nature of real community. The principles of the community safety and well-being plan align significantly with those of asset-based community development, which includes a significant dose of decentralization. And that can be hard for us. It's difficult for government to conceive of itself in new ways. And systems have a natural way of growing and centralizing that runs counter to human nature and the nature of community. People are messy, volatile, particularly when we have the freedom to be truly ourselves and employ our own agency. Counter to systems that seek simplicity and efficiency. At its heart, the framework of a community safety and well-being plan recognizes this and is perhaps one of the only government frameworks to do so. On that basis, I'm currently advocating for a lower tier application or implementation plan for Brighton, one that engages on the grassroots neighborhood level in a model I believe can not only integrate with the county level plan, but could also be replicated in communities across Northumberland. This approach would engage with, facilitate, and empower community-driven initiatives in which neighbors look out for one another. Everything from churches, to food banks, to libraries, even to community policing and neighborhood watch, so that residents who feel that they owe something to one another also feel empowered to serve one another, and have avenues for doing so that are supported by, but not monopolized by, government. Figuring out how to do this well, finding the balance between human diversity and agency on one hand and efficient and effective universal services on the other is no simple task, but I believe that it's possible for us to make a significant start right here with the expertise already in the room. Along the way, this new plan can help clarify and distinguish the respective roles of upper and lower tiers of municipal governance and serve to significantly empower and bolster the voluntary sector in our communities, which is, as you know, well in decline. While we can't rely on upper levels of government to adequately fund our social services team and actually eliminate homelessness through centralized programs, we can work to ensure that the towns and townships we live in have the built-in resilience of true community, an unofficial safety net provided by neighborliness and not just federal or provincial dollars. And while social services caseworker cannot replace the care of a community, the community can rally around neighbors with low acuity needs, and in so doing, allow social services to focus their efforts on those with the highest acuity needs, relieving pressure on the system and narrowing its focus without abandoning low acuity folks in a system that was designed for crisis intervention. Rather than changing the nature of that system, we would do better to revitalize the community's sense of what we owe to one another and provide more avenues for them to express that care. This would be worth doing whether or not we had high rates of homelessness, but because we do, it is essential. Thank you.
Jeff, thank you very much for your presentation. Questions or comments from committee members? Go ahead, Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through you, thank you, Councillor Wielden, for this. And I know that you're working on, specifically you, are working on a report coming out of Brighton's Homelessness Task Force group that will dovetail well with a current and future well-being plan for the county, across the county, understanding that our task force is Brighton specific, hyper-local, if you will. So I want to just point that out, that you know, you're not just a voice in a microphone, you're actually doing some work behind the scenes as well for our community, and it's appreciated. Councillor Wielden and I have had many discussions privately and publicly about the world being a better place when volunteers were taking care of neighbors, whether those volunteers came from churches or social service groups or social groups or what have you. And that when government takes over those, we tend to do not a good job. And that's not me saying anything bad about anybody in this room. It's just the nature of bureaucracy and how that works. When the boots on the ground, the volunteers on the ground are doing the work is done better, and it's done in a way that is better for the individual that they're dealing with, because that individual tends to, we all know who the family belongs to, we all know, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so if there's some way, somehow, and I don't know what that looks like, to get back to that, and I'm not dreaming about going back to the 1950s or what have you, but go back to a place where community was involved in community, I think the world becomes a better place. And so I know that that's what I'm anticipating, that's what your focus will be in Brighton's task force outputs. And I look forward to seeing those, and I look forward to sharing those with our friends at the other six municipalities across Northumberland County. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Warden. Go ahead, Dr. Warden.
Thank you very much for the presentation, and just dovetailing off of what the warden was speaking to, I think there's a real opportunity to focus more on upstream efforts, whether those are, you know, hyper-local, community, church, faith, other service organizations, etc. But I do going to put this challenge out to Brighton, as I will to all the municipalities, is now that we have the Youth Wellness Hub opened, the headquarters in Port Hope, then there's talk about doing services out to other communities. We do know that that is one of the most proven evidence-informed ways of building resilience, preventing homelessness, also mitigating future substance use. We are doing a campaign to maintain the financial viability of that hub through 100 Hearts campaign. So maybe that's something that you can bring to your community, because it is going to provide that really important community grounded service for Northumberland County. So it's just something to, I'm hoping that you will add to your conversations and deliberations. And if anybody would like to participate in that, they can contact me. But I want to go back to some of the other things that you were speaking about, Councillor, and that is the distinction between low and high acuity. And I think it's much easier to think about effective interventions, preventions for folks that are in the low acuity category. I think the high acuity category is the one that really is a struggle. and is the one that we see is creating the movement in BC and Alberta and Saskatchewan, and now being contemplated in the province around moving to towards more involuntary treatments and programs. And I do think that the deinstitutionalization that occurred in the 90s left a huge gap in our system between that which was available at an institutional level versus not putting those same supports into the community level. And I think that's a really uncomfortable conversation to have around whether or not, in fact, there may be a need for more formalized institutionalized settings for those that truly have high acuity, where they have very complex mental health care needs that are often compounded by substance use issues. And I think this is something that's actually not going to go away. And if we think about the county here, we certainly, regardless of the kinds of service organizations that we have, regardless of the good work that's being done, we just don't have enough in the space of detox, of longer term care. And we find a lot of folks get on the gerbil wheel of getting treatment, but then don't have the right kinds of longer term supports and services to help them succeed. And we also know that even with treatment, success rates it's challenging. They're really incredibly low. And so while I think that you're on the right track in terms of building some of that community movement towards supporting folks that do have a range of challenges, that I don't think that it solves some of the more complex kinds of issues. And I'm going to be very interested to see how the charter challenges will be dealt with at the other provinces, because having lived in BC for a number of years and seeing right in my doorstep, the downtown east side, all the different programs that were in place for years and years, and yet the opioid crisis there continues to worsen. And so I don't think there's a magic solution or necessarily just one way. And the evidence on involuntary treatment, you know, I followed the literature very carefully and it's inconclusive.
Yes, please go ahead, Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Warden. I agree that there are so many aspects of that conversation that is absolutely worth having. And I think what gives me some alarm and concern is that we seem to be moving in that direction without really having had that conversation about what does it actually mean in terms of people's rights and the values behind it. And I'm also concerned that as I see other jurisdictions going down this road, I see that, just as you mentioned, that the deinstitutionalization in the 90s there were not other supports built up to meet the lack that they had created through that process. In similar ways, I'll use California as the example. They've fully brought back conservatorship, but they do not have the supports in the system to actually support conservatorship in a functional model. And so many jurisdictions in California are not bothering to implement it. Others are, but finding that they lack resources to do it effectively. And so they've in some ways made the problem worse, because they're now in a position where they are taking over some people's rights, but not necessarily producing better outcomes for those people. And so recognizing that both the question of rights and the question of the resources to adequately create a system that, as you said, now we do not have the resources to serve people with treatment, even under the current state of things. If we were to move toward more institutionalization of people, we would need significantly more resources that do not appear to be currently forthcoming. Those decisions are out of our hands. They're provincial level or federal level decisions. And so that's why I have really tried to narrow my focus to what is in our hands here. And the raison d'etre of the Brighton Homelessness Task Force is to say, at a lower tier, which is officially has nothing to do with any of this, nonetheless, what is within our power and what is our responsibility. And so that grassroots level engagement and that application of asset-based community development is something within our hands, both at the lower and upper tier. of municipal governance. And I look forward to the province having a real conversation about people's rights and about whether institutionalization has a continued role moving forward. And I think I might find myself agreeing with some applications of that. But as far as my pay grade, it's at the grassroots.
Well, then, my previous comment, maybe you would like to take up having a node of the Youth Wellness Hub in Brighton, and that might be a way to connect at that very grassroots level.
I'll just note for everyone that Councillor Cleveland has arrived. Thank you for coming, Councillor Cleveland. I'm not going to try and, I think everybody else expressed themselves very well, but I did want to come back to a couple of things that you mentioned about the efficiency versus what makes you feel good. And there's a big difference in between those two. And I will argue a little bit with the warden. I hope we go back to the 50s, because that's where I'm from. And that's when we had programs that people looked at themselves a little bit more and took ownership for that. And we blacked a little, perhaps got away from that a little bit. And I think your project for Brighton is good. And I hope that AH will pick it up as well.
I'm just going to chime in about the 50s here. There are a lot of problematic things happened back then. So let's not hope for all of those things. But I get from a social involvement and volunteerism perspective what you're saying, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Comment?
Yeah, just maybe a comment and maybe a chance for the presenter to address it. I guess reading a lot of what's going out, specifically referring to the deputy wardens talk about the Lower East Side in Vancouver, there's several reports that have come out talking about the overlap and the fact that the variety of organizations trying to do the same thing at the end of the day actually prevents a lot of improvements because so many people are trying to solve the same problems and aren't really communicating. In terms of that, how do you see sort of lower tiers working towards projects that are out of their mandate, not contributing or getting in the way of other solutions, as we've seen in jurisdictions like Vancouver, in jurisdictions like Toronto, where you have multiple service agencies all trying to do the same thing and all sort of spending money at the same level, but not really moving people out of living on the street. And I'm just wondering how, if we're looking at what the lower tiers can and can't do, do we also ensure that the lower tiers aren't, in a sense, duplicating and or getting in the way of solutions like we've seen in other jurisdictions?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Thank you, Councillor Cleveland. That is the exact purpose of the Brighton Homelessness Task Force. Mayor Ostrander brought a motion or a report to Brighton Council back in the spring, noticing this exact phenomenon even happening in Brighton. And I understand Deputy Warden's comments about the Lower East Side. I was down on East Hastings twice a week all through college. So I have experienced that and seen that happen. I will say that that outpouring of different groups showing up and maybe duplicating efforts and maybe getting in each other's way and maybe not being as helpful as they might is often the result of the public seeing a problem and not understanding what is being done to solve it. And so along those lines, Bill Smith is going to be leading his social services staff in a presentation or training session in Brighton on December 11th at Trinity St. Andrews United Church, 2:30 to 4 o'clock. If anyone anywhere in Northumberland wants to know more about the homelessness system, please come on out and understand, you know, as a task force, much of what we've done in our meetings has been listening to Bill explain to us how the system works. And so that we know, and our task force is made up of people from Suppers Ready, from the food bank, from the library, from the DBIA, from the churches, and they didn't know, and I largely didn't know, when you see a person who is visibly homeless, what is that person's experience? Who's looking after that person? Has anyone been contacted? And I've come to realize that by the time any of us notice that they're there, our social services staff are already on the case, have already provided what services are acceptable to that person. And so much of what we're doing as a task force in Brighton is about making sure that there is open communication between these groups, understanding that that each of these groups has specializations and things that they're able to do maybe better in concert with each other, maybe better making sure they're not stepping on each other's toes. And the role of the municipality, aside from ensuring that we are charter compliant and all of our bylaw enforcement and things like that, is also potentially to be a facilitating force for these community grassroots groups, fully recognizing that we are not in any way positioned to duplicate county services, and that we dare not do anything to undermine volunteerism in a community where we know that across Canada, volunteerism is down by about half over the last decade. And so we don't want to take over the job of caring for our neighbors in ways that that might undermine the efforts of the churches and service clubs, et cetera. So we want to look at where can we support, where can we facilitate or coordinate, where can we just provide meeting space? And I think that by creating a plan at the lower tier, we can make sure that we're not in anybody's way, but also that our community groups are better able to support people who for one reason or another, often very, very good reasons, not willing to come here for Transition House.
You have a follow-up?
Just a really brief one. It'll be very quick, sir. Appreciate the leverage or sort of leniency. Mr. Whedon, this is great. I love to hear that in Brighton, you're taking steps and you're moving forward. This task force that meets in Brighton, I'm assuming this is a volunteer task force. No one's paid for the attendance. There's no meeting stipends. This is all just everyone's goodwill. That's so great to hear. And congratulations to what's going on in Brighton.
Thank you, Councillor. I'm going to read the resolution, Jeff. And thank you very much for your presentation. The resolution reads that the Social Service Committee received a delegation from Jeff Wheeldon regarding social service system review. I'll start again. That the Social Service Committee received a delegation from Jeff Wheeldon regarding social service system review for information. Mover and second. Moved by Warden Ostrander, seconded by Deputy Warden Hankiski. All in favor? Motion is carried. Jeff, thank you very much. Item